Now we go to the third year of the reign of the king of Belshazzar. 2 years after the preceding vision, a vision appeared unto me, even unto me Daniel, after that which appeared unto me at the first. Now here the Lord uses two domesticated animals to picture some of the same scenes that he had seen before. I saw in a vision, and it came to pass when I saw that I was at Shushan in the palace, which is in the province of Elam. And I saw in a vision, and I was by the river Ulai. Shushan is north of the Persian Gulf, east of Babylon, northeast. Then I lifted up mine eyes and saw, and behold, there stood before the river a ram, which had two horns, and the two horns were high, but the higher one came then, but one was higher than the other. Excuse me, the higher came up last. Now, the Medes, the Persians, came up last, but they were the stronger when they did come up, and they worked together for a long time. I saw the ram pushing westward, and northward, and southward, so that no beast might stand before him. Neither was there any that could deliver out of his hand, but he did according to his will and became great. Now, it is interesting that these two verses span something over 200 years. God's ways are surely interesting. Now, you see, if I were going to tell you about the beast, I'd tell you everything about him in one text. But the way it is, I've got to read half the Bible to find out all about him. God wrote and arranged wisely. We find out certain things here in the preceding chapter, in the 11th chapter, in the 12th chapter, in Revelation, and in Paul's writings, in John's writings. John is the only writer of the New Testament that uses the word Antichrist. As I was considering, behold, an he-goat came from the west. Now at this time there were some tribes in Greece. Sometimes they worked together, sometimes they fought. And to imagine that they could ever get together. Now if you'll think for a moment, America is a very young nation, as nations go. And yet, America could challenge the world militarily or scientifically. And it would have been comical if you could have gotten to some men saying about the 14th century and say, now there's going to be a nation develop on a continent that you don't even know exists. And they're going to be able to challenge the world if they want to. People would have said, if the word had been invented, they'd have said tommy rot. I read about the first white man, not the first Indian, but the first white man that ever saw what is now called Yellowstone Park. When he came out and tried to tell about it, people decided he'd gone insane. We're so prone not to believe what we haven't seen. I was teaching a Bible class one time, and a man said, Brother Franklin, I don't believe that. Well, now there was, as I stated, about 200 years between these verses, from the time the Medes and the Persians took power until Alexander the Great came to the fore. As I was considering, behold, an he-goat came from the west on the face of the whole earth, and touched not the ground, and the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. I'll tell you just a few things about Alexander the Great. His tutor was one of the philosophers of Greece, and I can't call his name right now, but Alexander went into Egypt and had himself declared a god. And his philosopher said, well, Alexander wants to be a god, let him be. He wasn't very much impressed with it. And they burned incense to him, and they kindled fires for him, and one time he said he wished they'd treat him more like a man and not so much like a god. They built him too small a fire. God wasn't supposed to need much fire. But anyway, he was a military genius. And when he came against the Persians, there was a man that knew their power as an army, and he tried to warn the Persians, and they put him to death. And he conquered them so fast. They had such a huge army that they got in each other's way, and he had a group of men with shields that went in front, and then he had a group of men right behind them with spears that reached out between them, and then there was a group behind them with spears that went out in front of them. And they killed so many Persians that when he visited the field, it stunk so bad, he had to leave. And it was kind of sad in a way. He captured the ruler's wife and his children, and though he never harmed them, he kept them. And he chased the ruler all around. He never did catch him. Some of his men became traitors and killed him. To his displeasure, he wanted the man. And as I called attention earlier, I can't help but despise the world's great. Now, the Bible doesn't say anything against Nebuchadnezzar or Alexander. It just tells about him. But could you think of how many widows, fatherless children existed after that one of the battles, the Battle of Arbela, was that it? That changed the course of history. And at first he was a humane type of a fellow. But he had read Homer's writings, the Iliad, and such, how I believe in the Battle of Troy, they drug the king behind the chariot. And when he captured Gaza, he took their king and cut holes in his ankles and put thongs in them and tied him behind his chariot and drug him around the city until he died. So it's hard for me to call such men great. They may have been military geniuses, and they may have acted in the providence of God, but the crimes that they committed. And He-Goat came from the west on the face of the whole earth very rapid. He was entirely in charge, and he planned things well. Came so fast, it says he touched not the ground, and the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. Came to the ram that had two horns, which I had seen standing before the river, and he ran into him the fury of his power. And I saw him come close under the ram, and he was moved with choler. This word means bitterness. Sometime, some years before this, the Persians had invaded the Greeks' domain, and the Greeks had been longing for vengeance for some time. Now that they have the chance at it, they take it in full strength. He smote the ram and brake his two horns, and there was no power in the ram to stand before him. But he cast him down to the ground and stamped upon him, and there was none that could deliver the ram out of his hand. Getting a little ahead of the story, well, this next verse says the great horn was broken. Alexander the Great went to a party and drank an overabundance of wine. On the same night, he was invited to another party, and he determined to drink as much there as he had at the other place, just overindulgence, and it killed him. There is a town in Germany. It's the only walled city left in Germany. We visited it. And there's a story there that's interesting. In the 30-Year War, General Tilly captured the town, and the women were all standing around begging that he not kill the men, and somebody brought him a gallon of wine. He said, "All right, if there's anybody present that can drink that gallon of wine, I won't kill the men." The mayor drank it. Said he slept for 3 days. He really got drunk. Well, that's what killed Alexander the Great. They made a great wagon and hauled him back to Egypt and buried him. He died at 33 years of age. What a whirlwind character he was. It's interesting that he conquered Babylon and Babylon conquered him. He, everywhere he went, in Babylon, he had 50 young women, according to the historians, traveling with him. And for it came up four notable ones toward the four winds of heaven. The marginal, later we will see who these were. Notice in the center reference, on the next page, down under E, it says the four empires into which Alexander's empire was divided about B.C. 300 with Greece and Asia Minor. Asia Minor is modern Turkey, including Syria and Egypt. Syria and Egypt became what will be known in the 11th chapter as the king of the north and the king of the south. And to use Schofield's language, they fought seemingly half the time, and he said Israel was between the hammer and the anvil. They got the beating. Now we come to a controversial figure. Out of one of them came forth a little horn. Now this is a different character. And which waxed exceeding great toward the south and toward the east and toward the pleasant land, that Palestine. By the way, while I've touched on this, notice what he calls it here, the pleasant land. And in the 11th chapter and the 41st verse, he says, "He shall enter the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown." The glorious land, and in the 45th verse, "He shall plant the tabernacle of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain." Then Zechariah calls it the holy land, and Ezekiel calls it the glory of all lands. These are titles of the land of Palestine: the pleasant land, the holy land, and the glory of all lands. Now, you will find that practically all fundamental writers, now you will find this interesting thing about fundamental writers, they won't contradict each other as a whole. What one of them says, the rest will go along with it. Brother Buddy Wagner told me that he asked a very outstanding Bible teacher one time, why did God leave 1 Corinthians 12, 13, and 14 in the Bible? He knew where they stood on speaking in other tongues. And he said the man just began to talk, and all at once he just clammed up and wouldn't say another word. He said he got scared. I'd quote him. Now, they'll tell you that this little horn was Antiochus Epiphanes. And when they say it, they know that they're up against some things that they can't question. Do you have a Schofield Bible before you? Take his note on this number 2 on the same page and notice what he says. This passage, verses 10 through 14, is confessedly the most difficult in prophecy. Now, do you know why? They insist that it's Antiochus Epiphanes. And there are things said here that couldn't apply to Antiochus Epiphanes. He was a Syrian ruler that took over Jerusalem. He provoked the Maccabean revolt. He offered a pig on the altar, and some of his men entered the Holy of Holies, And the Maccabees rebelled, and so they insist that Antiochus Epiphanes is the little horn, but there are too many things that won't fit. So we'll look at it for a moment. It waxed great even to the host of heaven. You'll notice that his activities are very much on the religious side, and we feel that he's the second beast of Revelation 13. It cast down some of the host of the stars to the ground and stamped upon them, probably meaning the Jewish people. But I think I'll give your ears a rest for a few minutes. He doesn't come up among the kings. He comes from one of the empires, one of the kingdoms into which Alexander's kingdom was divided, one of the four. And in the 11th verse, it is said he magnifies himself even to the prince of the host. Now, I personally believe that to be Christ. And that's why we couldn't picture a king who lived some 160-some years before Christ as fulfilling this. And by him the daily sacrifice was taken away, and the place of his sanctuary was cast down. And an host was given him against the daily sacrifice by reason of the transgression. It cast down the truth to the ground, and it practiced and prospered. Now, the Jews had a number of sacrifices, but the daily sacrifice was a lamb that was offered, one of the morning and one of the evening. And then on the Sabbath, this sacrifice was doubled, two in the morning and two in the evening. And we will read more about the daily sacrifice in the 9th chapter and in the 12th chapter, I believe. And certain dates are given. And host was given him against the daily sacrifice by reason of the transgression. Notice again that his victories are very much religious. It cast down the truth to the ground, and it practiced and prospered. Then I heard one saint speaking, and another saint said unto that certain saint which spake, how long shall be the vision concerning the daily sacrifice and the transgression of desolation, give both the sanctuary and the host to be trodden underfoot? And he said unto me, unto 2,300 days, then shall the sanctuary be cleansed. How many of you ever seen Brother Copley's chart in the book of Revelation? Most of you have. I have it on a large scale. I had a friend of mine in Denver fix it for me. And somewhere along in Daniel, I'll bring it down and we'll have a lesson or two in connection with it. You see, what events take place within that period of time? And sometimes it takes some real mental gymnastics to put them in their right place. Now you take this for example. I have never fully satisfied myself where the woman of Revelation 17 will be judged. Some say very late. There are certain things that make it indicate that it might be early. But be that as it may, we will look at this chart if our Lord permit. We'll look at 2,300 days, and we will look at the days that were given back in the 7th chapter, when the powers would be given into his hands until a time, times, and the dividing of time. We looked at the 4th verse in the 14th verse in the 9th chapter, and the 27th verse, he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week, and in the midst of the week he shall cause the sacrifice and oblation to cease. And in the 12th chapter, there are two other dates given. The 11th verse says, from the time that the daily sacrifice shall be taken away, and the abomination that maketh desolate set up, there shall be 1,290 days. Blessed is he that waiteth and cometh to the 1,305 days. Then in Revelation 11:3, we have the first date that is given there. That is, they shall prophesy 1,203 days. And I might tell you that all the dates given in the book of Revelation and the book of Daniel, all of them are based on 360-day years. That's the way the dates are reckoned, and that's the way we have to reckon. In the Bible, a 360-day year is 5 days shorter than our year, and that's the way the dates are given. So we reckon with the Bible, and we will have some lessons on that. And I might just turn to Revelation and show you where the other dates are, and when you have a little leisure time, you may want to look at some of them. I mentioned the first one that is given in the 11th chapter. I will give power in the 3rd verse unto my two witnesses, and they shall prophesy 1,203 days clothed in sackcloth. And then in 12, in the 6th verse, the woman fled into the wilderness, where she hath a place prepared of God, that they should feed her there 1,203 days. Now one of your mental gymnastics is to find out which end of the 7 years each one of them is on. In the 13th chapter, in the 5th verse, there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given unto him to continue 42 months. Now those are the dates that are given in Daniel and Revelation, and it covers It has to do with this covenant I read in 9:27. He shall make a covenant with many for 1 week. And this, all of this is jammed into that week. You see, the overcoming saints will be translated at about its beginning. Jesus will become an official king at about that time, not recognized on the earth, but recognized in heaven. The day of Christ will begin when he takes his throne. And so he will be given permission to take away the daily sacrifice. It will be taken away, according to Daniel 9. And it came to pass when I, Daniel, had seen the vision and sought for the meaning, then behold, there stood before me as the appearance of a man. And I heard a man's voice between the banks of Ulai, which called and said, Gabriel, make this man to understand this vision. Now we find that Gabriel is mentioned here, and in Daniel 9:21, and then Gabriel was the one that took the message of John Baptist's birth to Zechariah, and also took the message to Mary. These are the only places he is mentioned. We'll find Michael mentioned in these connections, and he said that the prince of Persia withstood him, and he said, Michael came and helped me. Then he said, there's none stands with me in these but Michael, your prince. And then in the 12th chapter, at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince that standeth for the children of thy people. And then in Jude, we read, Michael, when contending with the devil about the body of Moses, durst not bring against him a railing accusation. And then in Revelation 12, the dragon fought, Michael fought and his angels, and the dragon fought and his angels. And now these are the only places where these two angels are mentioned. They're the only two of the good angels whose names are given, and only Michael is ever called an archangel. There may be, Michael is called one of the chief princes. This implies that there are others. But, well, when Thessalonians 4 speaks of the voice of the archangel, whether it has reference to Christ or whether it will actually be an archangel, it used to be, and to this day, many people think Gabriel is going to blow a horn. And did you ever read in older literature the byword, well, Gabriel, blow your horn? Some of you remember it. Well, these are the only places these two angels are mentioned where they can be pointed out. They may have been an angel that appeared here and there. I do not know. But they are mentioned in these places. And I mentioned the fact that this is the only one, Michael, that's ever called an archangel, because people speak of different archangels. And I would advise you in this, stay within the bounds of the scripture. I have known men that could just tell you so many things. You'll meet people that can tell you exactly what the Urim and the Thummim, that's the Hebrew pronunciation, are, but the Bible doesn't tell. Joe Smith of the Mormon Church said they were the glasses that he had, that he could read this book that he found when he put them on. But you see, there are a lot of people that will tell you a lot of things, but the Bible doesn't tell you. And so there are people that will try to be wiser than the Bible. He will meet them right along. A young man, I didn't meet him, I think I saw him once. He became quite prominent. He wrote a book that had to do with the 11th chapter of Corinthians, and he said, the Lord showed me that it doesn't matter whether a woman wears a covering on her head or not when she prays or prophesies. He should read that book again, shouldn't he? Should read the chapter. And so, I saw the vision, sought the meaning. There was a man that stood by me. He came near where I stood, and when he came, I was afraid and fell upon my face. But he said unto me, understand, O son of man, and notice when this is to take place. At the time of the end shall be the vision. This is one of the reasons we can't apply this personally to Antiochus Epiphanes. Dr. Ironside applied it to Assyrian power of the north that will rise up according to him. Now as he was speaking with me, I was in a deep sleep on my face toward the ground, but he touched me and set me upright. And he said, behold, I will make thee know what shall be in the last end of the indignation, for at the time appointed the end shall be. Notice again, in this that I have read, the word end occurs three times, and notice this, the time appointed. I'm glad God appoints so many things. The ram which thou sawest having two horns are the kings of Media and Persia, and the rough goat is the king of Grecia. The first time it is mentioned by this title. You remember that Japheth had a son named Javan back in the 10th of Genesis? That's exactly the same word translated Greece or Grecia. And his descendants are supposed to have populated the area that we call Greece, very old settlement. And as I stated, just in the natural, people couldn't have suspected that there would come this power from Greece. Remember, this vision was taking place while Babylon was still in power. And he said, the great horn that is between his eyes is the first king. Now that being broken, whereas four stood up for it, four kingdoms shall stand up out of the nation, but not in his power. And again, in the latter times of their kingdom, when the transgressors are come to the full, a king of fierce countenance and understanding dark sentences shall stand up, and his power shall be mighty. But notice this, not by his own power. Now this would, I'll read to you this in the 13th chapter of the book of Revelation in connection with this beast in the 14th verse. Now this is the second beast of Revelation 13. He deceived them that dwell on the earth by means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast. Seemingly the beast helps him perform these miracles, and we read in Revelation, or rather 2 Thessalonians 2, that the beast will come with all power and signs and lying wonders, deceptions. Be mighty, but not by his own power, and he shall destroy wonderfully. He shall prosper and practice, and shall destroy the mighty and the holy people. I have called your attention repeatedly to the abomination of desolation in Matthew 12, and to the woman that flees into the wilderness in the 12th chapter of Revelation, and to the martyrs that will take place, and the fact that when this image is set up, this second beast will cause those that will not worship it to be put to death. Perhaps many people may starve to death that refuse to take the mark of the beast. I do not know. They will be killed in various ways. And through his policy also he shall cause craft to prosper in his hand, and he shall magnify himself in his heart. How great I am! By peace shall destroy many. Probably be a great diplomat, but utterly heartless. He shall also stand up against the prince of princes. I think this could be none other but Christ. But he shall be broken without hand. There will be a stone cut out without hands, but this man will be broken without hands, and we feel that it will be the second beast. And those, no wonder the Bible speaks of it as the most terrible time that shall ever be. And there are certain things, Brother Fellers was telling me about a snake in India that never gets any bigger than your finger, but if it bites you, it takes just 7 minutes for the venom to kill you. Well, that's the way it will be then. There will be killing everywhere. There will be all kinds of killing. It'll be worse than the Dark Ages. I saw in Europe in various places the torture instruments, and in a museum in Kingston, Jamaica, I saw human branding irons. You've seen cattle branded. These branding irons are just about that big, like a bee. I remember a bee. Just get it red hot and put it on your slave's skin somewhere. And I saw a torture instrument over there. It was made out of strap iron with a hook on it. And a man's body would exactly fit in it, and then it fastened. And if they had to punish a slave, they'd put him in that, strip him first, and then hang him up, had a big hook on it, hang him up out in the sun. You could imagine what the tropical sun would do to your nude body. After a few hours, the sun here will ruin your body. But that's the heartlessness of man. But with the devil right down here, and all restraint lifted. I think I told you the story when we had the Bible school, when Sister Bodie was alive, we had the Bible school over on Harrison. There were three women came there from Ethiopia after Mussolini had invaded and taken over the country in the 30s. And they had been in Addis Ababa, and they told us this story. The Italians were in charge, and there was a minor official killed. And in order to punish the town, they lifted absolutely every bit of restraint for 3 days. It didn't matter what you did, there was no official to say a word to you. And she said somebody would steal something and start off with it, and somebody'd shoot him, and he'd start off with it, and then somebody'd shoot him. And she said they sent a truck from the American embassy to get them, and they left the apartment and lay down in the bed of the truck so they wouldn't get shot. When they came back, the only thing left in the apartment was some clothes hangers. Everything else had been taken. Now, could you possibly imagine what it would be like in Kansas City if every bit of police restraint was lifted? You wouldn't be safe. Anything you have wouldn't be safe. Your car wouldn't be safe. And if nothing else, they'd just throw rocks through your windows. I know the devilishness of man. When Paul said, destruction and misery are in their ways, when he said their feet are swift to shed blood, he knew what he was talking about. Well, God will let men manifest what they are, and then he will judge them. The vision of the evening and the morning, which was told, is true. Wherefore, shut up the vision, for it shall be for many days. That is, it will be off yonder a distance. And I, Daniel, fainted and was sick certain days, again in sympathy with his dear people, to know that they were going to be subjugated to all of these things. You'll notice he waxed great to the host of heaven. Daniel didn't have to guess as to who he was talking about. And afterward I rose up and did the king's business, and I was astonished at the vision, but none understood it.